Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to this month's Life Note for Parenting Month, July 2020. I'm your host, Jordan River, and today's Life Note is Out of Control: Why Disciplining Your Child Doesn't Work and What Will, by Dr. Shefali Tsabri, PhD, summarized by Erica Trinidad. In this wonderfully insightful and extremely practical book, Dr. Shefali goes to the heart of the problems that parents encounter in their relationships with their children, challenging society's dependence on discipline, and instead offering a transformational approach that draws parent and child together through conscious connection. Far from a laissez-faire, anything-goes strategy, conscious connection in the parent-child relationship doesn't just resolve unruly behavior once and for all. It ultimately teaches children self-responsibility and complete ownership of their lives and identities, leading them to create their own positive, meaningful relationship with their parents and with the world. For this month's Life Note, we will dive deep into the reasons why punitive discipline measures simply don't work, and why conscious connection is the key to parents raising happy, healthy individuals that can thrive for the rest of their lives. As always, let's start with a quote. "It's therefore time to change the entire paradigm of parenting, at the core of which is the flawed idea of authoritarian discipline. That is, lording it over our children heavy-handedly instead of working with them in a constructive manner that encourages them to become self-disciplined." Core concept. Contrary to the popular parenting practice of disciplining your child, Shefali introduces a new method of instilling self-discipline, conscious connection. Whether it's teaching children the natural consequences of their actions, or enforcing boundaries with love and care, utilizing conscious connection requires that parents unlearn the age-old adage that children must be controlled and should only do what they're told. Instead, we must focus on understanding children's needs. A child's behavior is just the expression of their needs, which fall into two categories: connection and learning. By deciphering the root of the children's behavior and focusing on these roots, parents better address children's needs, ultimately teaching them how to act for themselves, and resulting in a better relationship between parent and child overall. Let's dive right into the big thoughts today. At the heart of traditional discipline is the need for control. When a parent tries to impose this onto their child, this fuels disconnection between them and reinforces the cycle of discipline. Quote, "The child's behavior may fall in line, but their heart doesn't." End quote. Originally, the word discipline had a benign meaning. It was associated with education and training. Nowadays, however, when parents talk about discipline, it's assumed to be a strategy to control a child's behavior, one that revolves around the parent exerting their will over the child. And in the case of parenting, when parents engage with their children from the belief that discipline is a vital aspect in their role as parents, they assume that children are inherently undisciplined and need to be civilized. This underlying belief, no matter how subconsciously hidden, is partly what drives the natural resentment on the part of a child, leading to even more undisciplined behavior, and fueling the destructive cycle of discipline all over again. Most parents feel at first that this is a broad claim. After all, a lot of the parenting techniques used nowadays were simply passed on based on what parents themselves experienced as children, and these parents turned out, quote, fine. However, when we translate the widely accepted discipline techniques that parents use into, say, our own adult relationships, a new perspective emerges. Quote, "To see how nonsensical this approach is, let's translate it into an adult level. After you have agreed to go on a diet, your spouse catches you cheating with a bag of donuts and takes away your car keys to prevent you from going to the donut shop again. Now, how do you feel?" Or you're late for a lunch date with a friend, so your friend demands you give her your favorite piece of jewelry. Again, how do you feel? End quote. The answers usually vary from resentment to downright hatred. After all, when Shefali asks the parents in her practice how they themselves would feel when they were disciplined as children, their answers were all the same. They felt terrified, cried a lot, wanted to run away, hated their parents, and even hated themselves. No matter how well-adjusted the parents claimed to be in adulthood, their natural emotional reactions as children themselves being disciplined did not lie. So why do parents nowadays expect anything different when they discipline their own children in the same way? This is the main reason Shefali's clients turn to her for help. Their disciplinary measures haven't worked, and their children keep acting out more. If discipline truly worked, the same undesirable behavior wouldn't keep ensuing, or even worsening, on the part of the children. It is to this end that Shefali proposes a new paradigm to parenting. Instead of using traditional discipline to change the behavior of your children, parents must understand the root causes behind their behavior and foster deep connection with their child in order to empower them to adjust their behavior themselves. Children require connection, not correction. Connection is rooted in understanding the needs behind the child's behavior and addressing these needs through conscious strategies. Quote, if discipline is counterproductive, then how do children best learn? They learn only when they feel connected to us, which fosters calm acceptance and open receptivity. If they are hurt, scared, angry, or resentful, such feelings block their natural inclination to learn. End quote. No matter how good the intentions of the parents are, any kind of discipline leaves children feeling attacked. They resist being disciplined, not because they necessarily resent doing the right thing, but because threats and punishment belittle them. Children have naturally free spirits, and they can sense when they're trying to be controlled, so much so that they can't help defying parents if only to preserve some semblance of self-respect. In fact, a lot of parents find disciplining their child to be actually quite painful. But the problem is that they don't know what else to do. Most parents believe that as long as they find the best strategy to get their children to obey, then their problems will be solved. But to do this is to ignore the heart of the issue. It's not the question of how to discipline behavior, but of resolving the needs driving it in the first place. After all, a child's behavior is just the expression of either two types of needs, connection or learning. To connect is to uncover the deeper reasons driving children's behavior and resolving them together. To learn is to understand how to resolve these needs on their own in the future and act appropriately. For example, if a child says, "I hate you," most parents will take this at face value, make it personal, and reprimand the child. If instead, however, the parent probes deeper as to why the child had an outburst, they usually find that their reasons are understandable and can be resolved with the parent's help. They may be anxious about an exam, experiencing bullying at school, or even just tired and hungry and don't really mean what they say. Once uncovered, the parent can then help address the child's need in order for them to resolve it together, which fuels even more connection in the relationship. As a result, children become more receptive to learning how to respond to their own needs in the long run, and are able to take the lessons to heart. In this sense, parents must shift from the content of a child's actions to the reasons behind them. It is only then that parents can engage with the child about what's really bothering them, and can help foster the appropriate learning experiences that can teach children how to adjust their behavior for themselves in the future. Punishment generates resentment because it's arbitrary and unnatural. Allowing for natural consequences to emerge out of situations is what teaches children self-discipline. Quote, the idea of giving consequences misses the point. We don't give consequences. They aren't something we have to pick, as if we're wandering through the aisles of a supermarket selecting items to put in our cart. A consequence is something that's automatically built into a situation, without us having to do anything at all. The moment we imagine we have to give our child a consequence, which requires us to think of one, we have moved into the realm of punishment. End quote. Most parents believe that punishment and consequences are the same thing. But the main difference is that while punishments are arbitrary and imposed by the parent, consequences are naturally built into situations arising as a result of the child's behavior. To spell out the difference, we can take the case of a child who doesn't do their homework and is denied their favorite TV show. Is this a natural consequence of the child's behavior, or an arbitrarily imposed punishment? Would denying the program cause the child to say that they really learned their lesson? Or would it simply deepen the resentment in the child and further cement the image in their mind that their parents spoil their fun? In this case, the proper solution is for neither the parent to punish the child, nor even protect them through, for example, excessive tutoring or micromanaging. Instead, the best solution is to simply expose the child to the consequences of their own lack of motivation. This may take the form of getting a poor grade, which would then allow the child to experience their failure, to respond to their inherent desire to achieve. A highly different situation where a child does their homework born out of the need for achievement imposed on them by a parent, or even fear of punishment. What most parents find difficult is that they've been schooled to think that they need to impose lessons on their children, so much so that it feels counterintuitive to allow the lessons to emerge naturally out of the situation. Consequences involve no coercion or bending of a child's will, because they are simply about cause and effect. The parent's focus should always be in helping children respond to the consequences of their own actions in order for them to develop a meaningful relationship with the world. The only time a parent has to intervene with a natural consequence is when there's a real danger, such as when a child is about to run into a busy road, swallow a poisonous substance, or simply engage in behavior which results in natural consequence that is inherently detrimental to the children, and which the child may not know or understand yet. Other than these situations, the general rule of thumb is that parents should be careful how they meddle. This doesn't discount their need to prepare their child for life's consequences in the best way they can. After all, parents have a right to forewarn their children and help them realize the realm of possibility when it comes to the negative consequences of their actions. However, if the child refuses to take the parent's advice, it's important for the parent to step back and allow the natural consequences to do their work. When parents stay out of the picture, children automatically develop self-discipline, self-reliance, and a sense of responsibility. For most parents adopting this concept, the bigger challenge lies in cultivating patience. Sometimes life has to up the ante before a child learns. Your child may touch the hot stove once and remember to never do it again. Or it may take them 3 or 4 accidents before the lesson really sticks. In general, as long as the parent doesn't intervene to save the child from the consequence, and provided there is no grave injury or death involved, of course, then the child will learn. Rescuing children from the natural consequences of their actions impedes learning. The way for children to learn how to adjust their behavior on their own is to let cause and effect take place. On the other hand, some parents might also feel that being a good parent requires rescuing their children from the painful consequences of their actions. Take, for example, the case of one parent who would always drive her daughter to school as soon as she missed the bus. She turned to Dr. Shefali with frustrations regarding her daughter's tardiness and has tried every tip in the book to engage with her to speed up her morning routine. But what she didn't realize was that by continually rescuing her daughter from experiencing the real consequences of missing school, she wasn't taking the lesson of reaching the school bus on time to heart. It was only when the mother chose to not drive her daughter to school one morning, with fair warning in advance, that her daughter did finally feel the weight of missing class. It was then she realized she needed help and asked her mother for advice. In this case, this is where the parent stepped in and brainstormed solutions with her daughter and helped her create and practice a morning routine to improve her time management. Afterwards, her daughter never missed the bus again. Ultimately, it's about teaching children that every action has a natural reaction. When parents take themselves out of the equation between their child and their interactions with the world, they are no longer seen as the enemy, but instead are viewed as the allies that their children can turn to for comfort and guidance. Defining clear limits with love and care teaches children how to be practical in relating to others, which is more effective than focusing on the inherent morality of their behavior. Quote, "Rudeness isn't a matter of badness. To treat the child as if they are bad when they are rude is to miss the real issue. Instead, the child needs to learn that rudeness isn't an effective way of relating and won't get them what they want. Instead of attacking back when a child is rude or punishing them, we need to disengage from their rudeness. The child then learns that there's no payoff in such behavior. They don't achieve what they're trying to achieve." End quote. In all human relationships, limits are necessary. Limits define what works and what doesn't in terms of the effect that we have on each other. Often referred to as boundaries, they must be practical, clear, and consistent. When parents teach boundaries empathetically and consistently, the need for discipline evaporates. Further, when a child's behavior towards the parent is inappropriate, it's their way of expressing the need for one of the two things. They are asking for connection or for containment of their emotion. For example, if your child is being rude, you need to determine whether they're in a calm enough state to talk directly about the rudeness or whether you need to allow them some time to cool off. If it's the latter, the parent can simply walk away calmly and non-reactively. The child then experiences the natural consequence of losing the companionship of the parent until they're able to respond in a polite manner. Once they're ready to restore the lost companionship, the parent can then discuss why rudeness isn't an effective way to communicate. In this instance, the child's rudeness doesn't have to be about how bad they are. Instead, it's simply an opportunity for them to learn that being rude will not get them what they want. So instead of attacking the child or punishing them, parents must simply disengage from their rudeness. As a result, children will learn that there's no payoff in such behavior. They won't achieve anything from it. In this way, when parents don't make the behavior, such as being sassy or bratty, a moral issue, it teaches children to be practical. They learn that relationships thrive when there's mutual respect, and that being polite is one of the ways it's expressed effectively. Generally, the challenge for parents is to remain loving, yet neutral, when their own boundaries are crossed. When someone violates us in a deeply hurtful manner, our instinct is to limit the other person's freedom in some way. They hit us, so we hit them. They are rude, so we yell at them and shame them. But such tit-for-tat reactivity only drives more disconnection between the parent and the child. Ultimately, the most powerful tool that parents have at their disposal is their personal presence. Children sit up and pay attention when they experience this. They learn based not on what their parents tell them, but on how their parents relate to them through their actions. When boundaries are established lovingly, yet firmly, in this manner, a more connected relationship between parent and child arises. Behind any dysfunctional behavior is always a reflection of a child's feeling of disempowerment. At the heart of it is a lack of connection to their own authentic self or to their parent. Whether it's a child who misses curfew, has poor grades, bullies others, or engages in sibling rivalry, there's usually a deeper reason behind the behavior that parents can address. If teens keep breaking curfew despite reprimands from their parents, it can be more effective to have an honest dialogue that best satisfies both parties. When parents approach in a non-attacking manner, the child is more open to creating solutions and to understand the reasons behind the curfew. If, after taking this approach, the teen continues to break curfew, it's usually a sure sign that the child feels disconnected from the parent, whether it's arising out of a lack of understanding of and respect for the parent, That usually comes because they themselves felt it at first. Or it could be a symptom that the home environment is less than ideal for the teen, or even hostile. In such a situation, the kind of intervention that would work is sincere, concentrated dialogue, ideally with an external moderator, one where parents are open to honest feedback, children have a safe place to speak, and both parties can examine their concerns and see how they can meet in the middle. Or take the case of a child who bullies others. It's widely believed that serious dysfunction occurs in a child because the parent wasn't firm enough. But in reality, it's a lack of connection, not discipline, that drives their dysfunctional behavior. In general, when a child grows up feeling invalidated, they are left with only two possible recourses. They either stuff their feelings down, leaving to anxiety, self-harm, or even depression, or they project it onto others, how badly they feel. When a child's own voice has been neglected or bullied into silence, they can no longer respond to that voice. This is how they lose touch with their natural empathy for others and end up bullying the ones around them. As a result, terrible things may ensue, both for the individual and for the people who cross their paths. At the end of the day, instead of disciplining children in these scenarios, which is ultimately directed towards compliance, parents must teach their kids how to know their feelings and not be afraid to speak up if something isn't right. It's essential that parents are attuned to their children's needs from a young age and teach them to be fearless when it comes to being their own advocates. Behind the need for discipline is a parent's own feelings of inadequacy. When their child expresses their authentic self, it triggers the parent's own crushed sense of authentic self. Quote, "It took me a while to see this, but I came to understand that whenever Maya challenged my image of myself as a certain kind of parent, I was exposed to the fact that my own authentic self had been crushed in childhood. I was exposed to the fact that my own authentic self had been crushed in childhood. It was the loss of access to my own true self that caused me to need my daughter to provide me with a substitute sense of self, an image of myself as a certain kind of parent." End quote. Part of conscious parenting is understanding when the parent is simply replicating the way they themselves were parented in their childhood, even if these patterns don't necessarily serve to deepen the connection between the parent and their own child, and even if they consist of discipline tactics the parents don't resonate with. Whenever children express their authentic selves and it feels threatening to the parent, whether they state that they would rather wear a different outfit than the one the parents chose, or would rather pursue a college degree that the parents deem unworthy, it can remind parents of their own loss of access to their true selves. This loss is what triggers parents to want their children to provide them with a substitute sense of self, an image of themselves as a certain type of parent, one whose children behave perfectly according to the parents' own ideals and desires. When parents feel this anxiety and have no idea why, one of the usual ways they cope is by projecting it outward, with their children being a frequent recipient of their own underlying fear. As a result, parents fear for their children's well-being, their safety, their future, and consequently discipline them to keep them safe under the parents' control. Most parents justify this fear by telling themselves that they're doing it because they love their children so much. But in reality, this sense of lack, rooted in the empty feeling left by the parent's own crushed authentic self, often gets confused with love. And unless parents are able to discern the difference between love and their own need for their children to assuage their own feeling of lack, the parent's connection with the child will continue to be compromised. The core task of parenting is to connect with children and help them be in touch with their own authentic selves. To do so, parents can utilize the winner approach. Quote, "Our children come with an innate wholeness and worth. They come to us with the hope we will nurture in them an awareness of this wholeness and worth. When we betray them because of our past conditioning, we deny them their basic right to be who they are." End quote. Parents must connect with children instead of imagining that they constantly need to correct them. Children want nothing more than to feel loved for who they truly are in their authentic self. Not being appreciated for who they are is the root of all negative behavior, whether it's psychological problems or even social dysfunction. And behind every parent's life story lies a child who was, to some degree, denied the development of their own authentic self. As parents live out this life story, they may end up cheating their own children out of their own right to express themselves in their own unique way. When parents resort to discipline, it makes their children more like the parents instead of themselves, ultimately crushing them as the parents once were crushed in their own childhoods. So in order for parents to avoid this scenario and foster more connection in their own relationship with their children, their focus should be to help them connect to their authentic selves. And parents can do so through the winner approach. First, witness. Witness what's actually happening in the present moment. To be a witness requires the ability to step out of the role as a parent and to simply observe what is transpiring. I hear you. I see you. I accept you. That's the powerful message of the witnessing state. It opens the doorway to connection and removes the battle for discipline. Second, inquire. Inquiry doesn't mean prying into children's lives. Instead, it's about getting to the underlying reason for what's happening. There are two facets to this step. First, parents must accept that they will never truly know another person, and it is not their job to do so, even if it is their own children. The purpose of inquiring isn't to figure out who their child is, but simply to focus on fostering a connection with them in whatever ways the child chooses to reveal themselves to the parent. The second aspect of inquiring involves discovering the why behind a behavior. Not of the child's, but of the parent's. What is it about us that led to the reaction that we are getting from our child? What are we doing to spur them away from their own true nature and into aberrant behavior? Often, when parents ask why a child does something, it's more of an accusation than a true investigation of reasons. Inquiry is about changing the focus from inquisitor to seeker, seeking to genuinely understand the dynamics in the relationship. This softer energy invites children to reveal themselves to their parents from an authentic place, helping parents address the situation better. Third, neutrality. Because of a parent's own conditioning, they may have a tendency to bring unnecessary emotion into their interactions with their children. Children always respond at the feeling level, not at the level of logic, and whatever emotions the parent projects sets the tone of their interaction with the child. When parents utilize neutrality in situations, it permits them to take meaningful action, which is fundamentally different in character from reacting. So when a parent comes from the state of wholeness, there is a natural strength in the way they relate to their child, whether it's them making a simple request or even moving forward with a solution that has the whole family in a crisis. Fourth, negotiate. The art of negotiation is one of the most valuable skills a child can develop that helps them maneuver through the complexities of life in a way that adds to them instead of detracting from them. When children are taught how to negotiate, they are encouraged to see life as a creative process in which they are capable of influencing the outcome of situations. This leads them to understand that relationships can be mutually enriching so that both parties claim their full rights as individuals. Far from the widely accepted idea that negotiation is about winning, teaching children proper negotiation is about learning mutuality. It doesn't become the child versus the parent, but rather the both of them seeking fresh insights and blazing new trails together. Many view this process of negotiation as handing too much power to a child. However, the goal of parenting is to help children increasingly exercise power over their own lives in line with their growing ability to manage such power. Fifth, empathize. Only to the degree that parents are emotionally connected with themselves are they able to be present with another in their own experience, without the need to have it be anything other than what it is. As when parents relate to their children, sometimes caring for them doesn't involve as much doing as it does just being there for them, having the respect to let their children simply be where they are in their life's journey. It sends the message to the child that despite their pain or whatever they're struggling with, they are exactly where they're supposed to be in order to grow and become empowered. Allowing them this ability to sit in the pain of life is also what will empower them to receive joy in all of its magnificence. And sixth, resolve. To resolve conflict is to come to a state of completion with it, so that the issue at hand is fully processed and no emotional remnants are left churning. To this point, parents must have the resolve and resourcefulness to collaborate with their children on sustainable solutions. Aside from fostering deeper connection with the child, this helps them grow up in an atmosphere in which they themselves are honored as vibrant spirits with a unique blueprint. In short, this leads them to learn how to trust their own voice and guides them into their own truth, equipping our children with their own sense of resolve, enabling them to take on challenges, enjoy adventures, and lead a fruitful, meaningful life. I hope you enjoyed this time with me today exploring this wonderful life note. I hope you found it to be powerful and insightful. I can't wait to bring you more wisdom next month and each month as we continue exploring the 12 categories. For now, I wish you the best of luck in crafting your life vision. Here's to moving one book closer to a 12-category smart life. Have an extraordinary day, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.